All right, listen up. We are back with another episode of the Construction Mentor Podcast. My name is Ike. I am your host. As always, you can follow me on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. You can follow this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. My handle is always at the Construction Mentor. What are we here to do? We are here to promote the construction industry, whether that's architecture, construction, management, engineering, the trades, not only to young people for a viable career path. You can have a excellent career path and make a whole bunch of money and live in affluency in any of those paths. But we also want to help people rise in their career. Today, I have an awesome example of somebody who's young, who has stepped in the industry and shows a ton of promise. And I know so because I saw so firsthand. My last company, Sam Gray, stepped in and he was quickly somebody that I tried to, absorb onto my team and didn't want to let him go because I saw the value in him and value in him right away. And I was actually able to reconnect with him last week. And I hope, I guess I really don't care if they think that I might poach you at some point, but it's always been in the back of my mind. And what we mean by poaching, for those of you who don't know, it's when you steal. When you move to another company, you start your own company and you steal people from that you used to work with or from other people. So Sam Gray, how are you?
I'm good. I appreciate the introduction, man, but you might have to get in line for that.
So, hey, I want you to take a second just to talk about like what you do day to day, because I know a lot of young people, they don't really understand what I would call the white collar world of construction, especially general contracting for like big, you know, commercial stuff like we do. So what do you do exactly? What's your job title and what types of things do you do at work every day? Because you're not boots. I mean, you wear boots, but you're not breaking your back, right?
Right. So yeah, my official title is assistant project manager. My day to day kind of looks like running the subs, pushing the schedule, more specifically framing, drywall, stucco, civil, utilities. I'm from Division 3 all the way down to Division 33.
That so is when my he says subs, Sam's talking about subcontractors, right? And he's pushing, so he's the brain on the job, right? He's the director of the symphony. He's the quarterback on the field is what I would say. Right now, Sam, have you done any of those jobs?
No, I have not. I have not worked in the sub trade.
Okay, so it's very important because I don't think a lot of people understand that there is a path in the construction world where you don't have to get your hands dirty per se, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how did you come in to the industry?
I came into the industry. So I have a formal education, 4-year college education. My degree is in construction management from Louisiana State University, but I've been around construction at some point or some type in my life. I have an uncle who's a master carpenter. My grandfather was a bricklayer and a master carpenter. My father was a plant operator for 15 years, Georgia Pacific, Colonial Pipeline, a lot of different chemical plants. And so that's how I was attached to the construction industry. It wasn't my first choice. I tried the civil engineering. I tried the chemical engineering, but it didn't work out. And so I found myself trying construction management and I haven't looked back ever since.
So what you tried that at LSU, you tried civil and chemical engineering and just wasn't, was it the math? Was it just weird kids that were kind of antisocial? Like what was it about engineering?
Actually, it wasn't. So for chemical engineering, going into college, I had straight A's in chemistry, physics, biology, all that. I was a straight A student in high school, middle school, all the way up until college. I originally went into chemical engineering because that's what I was drawn to in high school. I did a lot of chemistry projects, chemistry competitions for different colleges, Duke, LSU, Texas A&M, Florida, did all that stuff. After the first year, I didn't feel drawn to it anymore. It wasn't that I wasn't excelling. I was still acing out in chemistry. I want to try something different. So I switched over to civil engineering, went all through my maths, my calculuses, diff EQs. I went through 4 advanced math classes, right?
Yeah, for you young people who don't understand, like you take calculus 1 through 4, and then you go to diff EQs. So that if algebra scares you, you don't even want to know about diff EQs. I had to take differential equations and it's like next level.
Yeah. Not to mention going through engineering, it's a totally different physics than it is for construction management. Construction management, you go through algebra based physics compared to calculus based physics for engineering. Right. So went through all my maths, went through all my statics, you know, thermal, fluids, all that. It was at the end of that semester where I made the critical decision to jump from civil engineering back over to construction. Mm-hmm. I had a long conversation with my dad, who's pretty much my hero, my mentor. By the way, I have to make this note. I'm an only child. So both my parents did not graduate college. Mm-hmm. So his deal for me was he's going to pay for my education as long as I graduate. So I had the conversation with him like, hey, this isn't working out. I want to let you know I'm thinking about switching over to construction management. I'm not alone. I got a friend coming with me. We're going to do this together. We're going to graduate. Mm-hmm. He was like, okay, as long as you give me that diploma at the end of your 4 or 5 years, I'm good. All right. So switched over to construction management, lost 35 hours, right? All my maths, all my physics, all my stats out the window, gone. So I restarted in construction management with 65 hours. So that pushed mm-hmm. another year onto my graduation date. Luckily, I have a strong work ethic. I like to work. So for mm-hmm. the next 2.5 years, I worked 40 hours and I took 18 hours of courses for the next five, six semesters. Yeah.
And what was work? Were you actually in the industry? Did you happen to get any experience or was it like a restaurant or something?
No. So I actually worked for Louisiana State Police as a student worker for all first four years of my college career. Last year, I finally got an internship with a company that literally was 5 minutes from where I lived. I grew up, passed it every day going to school, never knew what they were truly about, never knew what kind of company it was until I got into construction management and I landed that internship.
So talk to me about, you're obviously a bright kid. You know, when you went into college, you were taking all these kind of crazy math courses and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I think for most people or most young people, it would be a step down or something that people would look down on to say, I'm not going to be an engineer. I'm not going to, you know, be putting somebody on the moon. I'm going to go into construction. Right. And even when I was at college, the construction management kids were dumb, right? Mm-hmm. People thought that they were dumb. Did you have to like sell your dad on that? Or did he know because he was in the industry? And did you have to sell other people around you? Like what were people saying to you when you were like, yeah, I'm giving up engineering and I'm going into the dumb major?
Yeah. No, my dad, like you said, was in the industry for 15 years. So he understood the money that I could make, mm-hmm. but he was worried about us getting into the industry type of thing. Because where I'm from in Louisiana, I'm specifically from Baton Rouge, there's a stigma around the construction industry called the good old boy program. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a Boston thing or if you ever heard that saying before, but essentially the good old boy program when it comes to construction industry in Louisiana is, I'll get onto this later in the podcast, is for decades, Louisiana construction has been dominated by predominantly white males, right?
Yep.
And it's not about what you know, it's about who you know. Mm-hmm. And they all group together, they all network together, and they keep it in their friend group. Right. So my dad lived that in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s when he was a plant operator trying to get into that management level position, but he couldn't because of the good old boy program. So he was disappointed in a sense, but he knew who I was. I'm my father's son. I'm persistent. I'm diligent. I'm going to work my tail off to get where I want to be. I'm going to be in a position that I want to be, and only me can get me out of that position. So at the end of the day, I got his full support. I mean, mm-hmm. I have an uncle, a grandfather who was in the industry. So, I mean, I have the knowledge there, right? Mm-hmm. I know those guys. They have their own network. Someone's going to be able to get me a position. So that's how that went.
Yeah. So good old boy program, good old boy club. It's definitely something that's been around for a long time. I can tell you, you know, much like you, I had an advantage because my father was in the industry. So he had exposure. I knew what was available, what wasn't available, what options were there, what the potential that was there. Like I knew that the industry was something that, you know, had potential. And even though I had a degree, I got a mechanical engineering degree, I always knew that I wanted to wind up in what a lot of people would kind of look down on, which is why I have this podcast, right? Because I know a lot of people look down on it. But the good old boy club, 70s and 80s, definitely a real thing. Mm-hmm. It definitely hear people say that they feel like it still exists. I know a lot of union halls in different cities like New York City. Mm-hmm. I think I want to say the electricians got in trouble for it, you know, basically only letting in people's, you know, brothers, sons, things mm-hmm. like that. And I know from speaking, you know, I've chaired some, I guess I was going to say DEI, but it wasn't called DEI at the time. It was DISC, you know, a diversity group and a women in construction mm-hmm. group. And there are people that feel as though that there's some executive teams out there that there's like a good old boys club.
Right.
Definitely not as prevalent as it once was.
It really isn't. No.
You know, and I think, you know, when I watched you step in to the game, nobody gave shit about what you looked like. You came in and you worked hard and it was like, I want Sam on my job. Like that's what I care about. Right. Yeah. I think obviously we've come a long way, like as a society, but I also think mm-hmm. that people don't have time to play. Like the industry is dwindling. There's not enough people and there's not enough talented people or people that work hard. So it's a lot of people just like don't even have time for that crap anymore, right? You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to survive because there's not a lot of options out there for good talent anyway.
And to add to that point, I can't remember what episode it was, but you brought up the statistic that majority of the construction industry is making its way out, and you have young kids coming up and they have that new way of thinking that race doesn't really matter at this point. It's your character, how hard you work, if you make an impact on your workplace. And that's all that matters to me.
Right. And I think as time goes on, I just filmed a podcast the other day, and you know, it'll come out next week or the week after. And it was the same conversation about women. And it was like, yeah, okay, 20 years ago, not a lot of people in management. When your father was younger, 70s and 80s, not a lot of black men in management. But as time goes on and more people come into the industry and those numbers get boosted, people like yourself are obviously going to rise into the higher ranks. It's just undeniable with the work ethic you have and the skill set that you have that that's going to change, right? If there's any kind of good old boys club or good old people club being formed, it's competent people. like all the competent and hardworking people are going to be at the top, and they're going to just have no tolerance for people that are fucking useless and have no work ethic, right? Take a step back a little bit further. What was life like for Sam growing up? What was life like for Sam in like junior high, high school, normal childhood? What kind of kid were you like?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I'm an only child. So I got everything. I got the best of the world, you know?
Yeah, right.
I got all the Christmas presents. I got all the birthday presents. I got to do whatever I wanted with one caveat. Sam. One caveat, my dad's a pastor. So I grew up in a very religious home. You know, I didn't watch my first rated R movie until I was 18 years old. I didn't even get a cell phone until I was 17. Wow. So I grew up in a very strict, rule-oriented home, which I attribute to the way I am as a person today. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, you know, working for state police, where state police is a very kind of like small military type thing, you know, appropriate work attire. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Manners. Treating each other with respect. So all these things growing up together feel built me into the person I am today, and why I treat and respect everyone the same way, regardless of who you are as a person. But back to my childhood. So junior high, jack of all trades, baseball, basketball, track, competitive shooting, fishing, hunting, you name it, I was involved. High school, my high school was a small private Christian school. They got rid of sports my sophomore year in high school. So up until ninth grade, I played baseball. My sophomore year, I went to go play travel league, and my school canceled sports. So for that whole year, I didn't have any sports. So I lost any offers that I had. At the time, I had a preferred walk-on for Southern University to play baseball. I had a preferred walk-on to play baseball for LSU. And that's essentially what drove me to pursue a college education, because if I wouldn't be able to play sports in a year and only in the summer, my growth opportunities for that is very limited. Luckily, my junior year, they brought sports back. So I had 2 years left to play basketball and run track, which I did. I still was doing competitive shooting, which I loved. And then senior year, made the decision to pursue chemical engineering and then get to LSU, joined LSU, went into the engineering program, started doing competitive skeet shooting, did that for a year, and then chemical engineering. And you know how engineering goes, it takes over your life, your studying.
Yeah, right.
And then, so I let that go, and then education took over.
And the whole time you were young, your father was the guy, he was the mentor. Any other coaches, anything like that?
No, I mean, my father was involved in my sports career in some way, shape, or form my entire life. If he wasn't directly involved in coaching, he was directly involved in the sideline talks. After practice, we're working on this. Before practice, make sure you work on this. I'm going to be in the stands. If you have any questions, you're not understanding what the coach is saying, just give me a look. You know, me and my father had this type of hand signal where in a basketball game, I wasn't doing what I look over and he would mouth something to me and I could understand it. You know, you got to jump stop here. You're laying up too late. You're not going high off the backboard enough. That type of thing.
And it sounds like you feel as though that whether it was LSU or high school or sports or whatever it was, the best education and influence came from your father.
Yeah.
As a mentor.
For sure. My father pushed me. He pushed me. It's cliche to say this nowadays, but back when I was growing up, I got my ass spanked, man. It was brutal. Now, C's, you're getting your ass spanked. Anything below a B, you're getting punished. And that's how it was.
Would you change it?
No. Now that I'm a grown man, I'm married, you know, hoping to have kids of my own pretty soon, I understand where he was coming from. I understand. I get it. But I also get that his father was a drunkard. His father had PTSD from the military. His father was present in his life, but his father wasn't present in his life because of his alcohol addiction. So his mother raised him. His uncle raised him. My father is my hero for so many reasons. I mean, we can get into it if you like, but my father was born in the early 60s, the height of segregation. My grandmother was a middle school teacher in a segregated city outside of Baton Rouge called Marengouin. Now it's a city of about 20,000, but back then it was about a city of 20,000. My grandmother walked the picket line. She integrated the first elementary school in Baton Rouge. My father walked the picket line. My father was the first Black kid to integrate in all-white school in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. That's the good old boy program. He went through all that 15 years in the plants. You hear cases or stories about nooses showing up your work desk. My father lived that, and he's still here. He doesn't care. You know,
I hope you don't mind, but let me just stop you real quick. I know you're a disciplined individual, right? And that definitely came from your father. You just said, like, no B's, no C's, unacceptable. Your father doesn't sound like somebody who has any time for you to be playing the victim.
Exactly.
Talk to me about the importance of discipline in your life and the lack of the victim mentality, even though your dad had every reason to be mad at the world,
right,
and make every excuse.
It comes down to two sayings that I grew up and I still live by. One is spoil the rod, spoil the child. And two is life's hard, get over it. That's it for me. Bad things are going to come your way. It's about how you respond, not react to it. There's a difference between responding. There's a difference between reacting, right? So in life today, things are going to happen. People are going to say shitty things to you. They're going to call you names. They're going to tailgate you in bumper to bumper traffic going down 41. It just is what it is, right? It's about being mature, using intelligence, not emotions, that gets you far in life. It's gotten me far in life. No, everybody's a different story, but the foundation of success comes to discipline, right? You wake up at what, 4 a.m. every morning, get a workout in, get some cardio in, get a lift in. That's dedication. That's your routine. You're used to it now. It comes easy after you've done it for so long. It's about having that discipline, having that routine, and keeping it. Don't let anybody else block all the noise out. Like right now, I have noise canceling earphones on. Just cancel it out. Keep your head down. Just breathe for a few minutes, back into it.
You know, mentorship is the most important thing. And you very clearly had a strong mentor. And a lot of your father's values very clearly came from stuff he went through, high pressure situations that forged the man that he is. And he turned and forged you into the man that you are, which I don't know where you are in your personal life, but I'm excited for you to become a dad. When and if that time is right, we don't want that too early, but you're going to be an amazing father. I can tell. The world needs more Sam Grays. Believe me. I think a lot of people out there young people may have parents that are that present in their life, and they think that they're mean, and they think that they're coming down on them, and they should take a second to stop and to be gratuitous, to show some gratitude for having parents that are present in your life, because a parent that is present that instills discipline and work ethic and standards in your life is setting you up for success. There's a reason why across any race, not just Black people, but white people, Asian people, whoever it is, people that don't have two parents, the stats aren't good, right? Far more likely to drop out of school, far more likely to end up in jail. They're actually consistent across races, right? So, you know, if you have that, you should be grateful, you know, and you should work on that discipline, and you should work on raising your standard. If you don't have that, where would you go? I mean, is it a coach? Is it a friend's dad? I don't know what the answer is, but you've got to go find it, right? Maybe it's somebody on social media. It's the best thing that you can do, you know, in your life.
I mean, just to come over the top, I feel lucky. I feel gratuitous, as you say. I feel that I was afforded the opportunity to have both my parents. You know, I talked a lot about my dad, but my mom was right there too, you know, yelling at the refs for making a bad call. You know, every single football game, every single baseball game, every single competitive shooting event, you know, hell, my mother dropped me off to college for the first 4 weeks because I didn't have a car yet. That's the type of people my parents are. So
good for you. And if you don't have that, you know, the good thing is, like we said, that can forge you into a better person. And when it's your turn, you can be that person. You can be that leader that you didn't have, right? So that's incredible. So you get through school, you switch over to construction management. Mm-hmm. You come out. Was our job together the first job you had out of college?
No.
So where'd you go? Yeah. So you graduate from LSU, and what do you do? Where do you look?
So I graduated from LSU in 20. I went to work for a company named Lemoyne Company. They're one of the largest GCs. I can compare it to D'Angelo's Diamond is in Southwest Florida. They were the D'Angelo's Diamond of Louisiana.
A couple $100 million, big outfit, big 800-pound gorilla.
When I left to go to the job after that, they were pushing about 575 in revenue a year. So they're big. They're up there. So I left. My first job out of college was with them, working back on LSU's campus, full circle, doing their new dorm build, ground up build, $5 million project there. I was a project engineer for them. I was running HVAC, plumbing, all the MEPs, just learning the ropes, talking to the sub, sponging up all the knowledge that I could, because I knew I wasn't going to be there long, and I wasn't. After about 8 months. So
What I would call like an MEP coordinator, right? For you people, young people that don't know that. Anytime you hear the words, the letters MEP, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and mechanical is just a fancy word for HVAC, right? So it's your infrastructure. So Sam came in, and he was on a big job, big ground up job, and he was coordinating the HVAC, the plumbing, and the electrical guys. What do we mean when we say coordinating? We mean they got to fit all that stuff in the walls above the ceilings, and it's got to work with all the architectural details on the drawing. Now, how much did college prepare you to do that? Like, did you come out knowing what you were doing, or did you have to figure it out as you went? Did you find a mentor on site? How did Sam find his way?
I compare college to real life, like high school to college. Zero preparation. Yeah. Zero.
Right.
I knew how to add 2 + 2. Nah, I'm joking. It prepared me enough to where I knew what I was looking at. You know, I knew how to read plans. I knew what a submittal was. I knew what a RFI was. I knew what a change order was. So I was able to navigate those waves. But of course, everyone needs to learn. Everyone needs to have a mentor. So yeah, I latched on an assistant superintendent there, and we were connected at the hip. Wherever he went, I went. I was asking questions. He was asking questions. He was asking me questions. Every single day at 7 a.m., we were walking through the halls with the moisture detector pin, testing the humidity to make sure the LVP didn't buckle, you know,
just learning
as much as I could. Luxury vinyl plank.
Luxury vinyl plank. I'm not asking you to test you. I'm just trying to connect the dots. You know, we use this lingo every day, right? So if there's a younger person listening, I just want to connect the dots for them. That's it. That's okay. So what would you say? I still caught you very early in your career, and you stuck out to me right away. New person coming up, whether they're in college or they're a young person showing up for the trades, what's your advice day one? How do you stand out without knowing anything? What's a good way to stand out to the supers or PMs or, you know, the owner of a company?
Be confident. Simple as that. Confidence goes a long way. You may not be the smartest person in the room, but you're the brightest person in the room because of your confidence. You walk into your interview, you may not be the best person on the chopping block, but if you speak direct, you speak with authority, you speak like you actually know what you're talking about, it goes a long way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the really frustrating things that I'm finding with the younger group right now is they don't speak intentionally.
Right.
Right. Well, maybe kind of, well, I was going to, my plan is to do this tomorrow. You know, like, when is it going to be done? Friday, maybe Monday or Tuesday, or 2 to 3 days. You know what I mean? Like, they're all just ambiguous answers, and they're trying not to commit, or they're trying not to sound stupid. And it's like really frustrating. Like, guys, I don't care if you're wrong. I got to know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
I got to know. I got to know that you're going to tell me you're going to do something and it's going to be done, or you gave it a real freaking good effort and there's a good reason why it's not done. I got to know that you don't know what LVP means. I've got to know that you don't know how to coordinate something. You know, clear communication is like one of the most important skills that you can possibly learn. And I can tell you that when Sam showed up on, you know, in my office, the first, you know, I was working as a project executive and we were doing all kinds of projects in Southwest Florida. One of the first things that I noticed about Sam was how confident he was. And it wasn't cocky. It was just very stern. Yes, no, may have even been a sir in there or two, which I don't really care if anybody calls me sir, but I noticed it. And when Sam told me he was going to do something, he got it done and then some. He didn't come back with the bare minimum, or I didn't have to go find him and tell him, like, hey, did you do this? All right, well, now do this. He would do it and either take it the next step without asking me. He would take the initiative to take it the extra mile, find out more information, follow up with a subcontractor, not take no for an answer, call the vendor that they bought from, whatever it may be. Sam always took it the extra mile, right? And that's the type of person that you want to manage. And more important than just manage, but that's the type of person that you want to mentor and help grow, right? That's the type of person that you want to invest your time in. What Sam is talking about, Sam embodies that entirely. And I can't stress enough how important it is what he just said. And that's a unique answer, because I don't think a lot of people would tell young people to be more confident.
Because it took me, I'm gonna be honest, I was that kid at one point, not like, I'm not sure, kind of skittish. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, you know, it's that self-learning, like what works, trying different things, not in a disrespectful way, but, you know, speaking confidently, speaking with a little cockiness, like, yeah, I know what the LVP is. Yeah. Right. Why'd you ask me that question? Like, you're insulting my intelligence type thing, but it's a continuous growth.
Yeah. And I think it's just like sports. Like I always think of Kobe Bryant now, and I hated Kobe Bryant at the time because I'm a Celtics fan. Right. But it's too bad now that he's gone. Now I love him. And yeah. I got his book and I listen to, you know,
recipes.
Right. RIP. But, you know, confidence comes from somewhere. Confidence comes from preparation. Right. And, you know, he famously practiced 3 times a day and took 1,000 shots. And he's like, I'm not passing the ball at the end of the game. I'm taking the shot because I know that I'm the most prepared. Well, you don't just get confident. The difference between confident and cockiness is when you have nothing to back it up. That's when young people are cocky. When what makes you confident and what made Sam confident the first time that I met him was he actually looked up what something meant. He actually called somebody when they didn't tell him what he wanted to hear or what he knew that I didn't want to hear. He called the person behind them. He called the vendor. You know what I mean? He fully educated himself and at least attempted to do due diligence to educate himself on his own. So taking initiative, taking responsibility, not waiting for direction. You know, those are the types of things that give you confidence and allow you to speak, that not even allow, that empower you to speak with authority and to speak intentionally. That's what he's talking about. So you're in Louisiana now, and what brought you to Florida?
So in between moving to Florida and Lemoyne, so as I was saying, I was at that project for about 8 months, got shipped into Lafayette, which is about an hour outside of west of Baton Rouge. A lot of people call it Cajun town, swamp, the bayou, whatever you want to call it. But I was doing a healthcare headquarters for a company called LHC Group. They're one of the biggest healthcare insurance providers in between Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Mississippi. That was another $65 million project where, I kid you not, Ryan, that was probably in my short-lived construction career, probably the most annoying job I have ever worked on. But I learned a lot. That's the pro of it. I mean, we were at $1 million in change orders
on a $65 million job. So you're looking at like 25% in change orders increase, right?
That's
a lot.
Yes. And it was all owner initiated, which is insane for me. Insane.
Right.
Never worked on a job like that ever again. But after that job, I got shipped to do an Amazon facility in Port Allen, which was closer to home, about 15 minutes west of Baton Rouge. And then that was when I left Lemoyne to go work for the company I interned for, Cajun Industries. Same company that was 5 minutes. Literally, you come out of my neighborhood growing up, you make a left, it's right there. Like I could jog there every morning or just walk through a fence and I'm there.
And at what point did you learn how to boil crawfish?
That was just a growing up thing. I was every Easter.
That's just how you do it.
Boiled crawfish. Yeah, that's how you do it. You like that, didn't you?
So the other day, I show up to this event, and Sam's there with his big-ass spoon, and he's boiling a bunch of crawfish. And I'm like, the only reason that even just popped in my mind is because you said the word Cajun like 3 times.
Yeah.
And it just made me think of Louisiana and you know, the food and whatever. So
ironic, yeah, the company's name is Cajun, yeah.
Yeah, he's a heck of a cook. And that's a Louisiana thing, that it was the first time that I ever had that. And it was good. So you go over there. Mm-hmm. And at what point do you come to Florida?
So I worked with them about a year. And then my wife, my fiance at the time, she had just graduated from her master's program, getting her master's in speech therapy. Mm-hmm. And so coming here was her dream clinical, because they have to do a 1-year clinical fellowship before they can get officially licensed to be a speech therapist. So she got offered the job here, and we moved.
And how difficult
up everything,
you
moved.
So you wanted to move your fiance? Because
I didn't want to move at all, but if I didn't, I wouldn't have a fiance. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so you wanted to move for your fiance because you love you loved your fiance so much at the time that you wanted her to live out her dream.
Yep.
The point that I want to highlight is that you were able to do so so easily because of the work experience and the resume that you had, even at a young age. Yep. Right. So how quickly did you find a job? You found a job right away.
I'm not gonna lie, I applied to about 100 jobs between
100 jobs
a year. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I only got about 9 interviews. Mm-hmm. I like to tell people the story of how I got your job or where I'm at right now. I got a phone call. It was their HR manager. They were like, hey, we're just giving you a call. We want to talk to you. We saw you apply to us on LinkedIn or ZipRecruiter or whatever it was. Do you have a second? And I'll always remember this. It's kind of embarrassing now when we joke about it. I was like, I'm sorry, but what job is this for? Oh, Fort Myers? Okay, yeah, I'm available at 3.
Yeah, so... Listen, those aren't bad numbers. You know, I tell people all the time that it's a numbers game. Even though I had, you know, a better resume than you had because I'm just older than you and I've been around a little bit longer. When I moved to Florida, I reached out to 30 companies. I got 4 to call me back. I had 2 job offers in a day, right? So it's not, the batting average isn't something that I would concentrate on. I would concentrate on and focus on is that you had a resume to throw out there and you did have people call you back. You had 9 companies call you back, which is pretty good. And I'm sure you had options and, you know, you must have picked the best one. Now, is that where you're at now? That
it is. It is. I'm still with them. I'm loyal to them. They treat me very well. I'm not trying to, you know, hype them up if they listen to this. I'm not blowing gas up here. You know, no, they do treat me well. Like I said, the project that I'm on right now, I'm learning a lot. The company is an open ceiling policy company. Mm-hmm. You can learn as much as you want, how fast you want. There's nothing holding you back.
You know, that's the part that I loved when I was there. And, you know, they were giving me a lot of freedom and kind of carte blanche to do what I wanted to do. And that was the appeal to me. Somebody else came with just a different offer, a different situation. You know, but what Sam's talking about there is, again, these two guys who were, I guess what I would say, they were in the good old boys club at the second or third biggest GC in the country, spun off, started their own thing. And they are just hungry. They're starving for people to take responsibility and learn as fast as they can and pay people for it and give them all the promotions in the world. Because if they can, you know, or if they give them the best career path to the highest office that they possibly can, because the more people that they have to do that, the faster that they can grow the company.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You know? And so, we are, it's we're expanding. It's getting,
I mean, it's growing fast. So that in the first year they did 7 million. In the second year they did a million. Third year they did, I think, 35. Now they're over 100, right? And it's going up from there. They've only been around for like 7 years.
Yeah.
So talk about, you know, what are some, do you have any examples of job responsibilities that you just go take, or any advice for somebody that, you know, they feel like they're stuck or they're not sure how long they're going to be in their position or they want to get out of their position?
Right.
You know, what do they do?
For me, this is me. This is my situation. You know, everybody's situation is different. I'm a trailer tech guy. Something that started off as a side gig, like in college, you know, I want to get better at Excel. I want to get better at Word. I want to learn the shortcuts to make my life easier. Mm-hmm. Now makes everybody in the trailer easier. You know, you have the superintendent that doesn't know how to use computers. You have that project manager who wants to make his life easier. Sam, can you come in here and help me find a shortcut to add all these ROMs up? For those who don't know what ROM is. Yeah
rough order of magnitude. Rough order of magnitude. Yeah. It's an educated guess at what something costs.
Yeah. So that's for me is job stability. You know, you can't replace that. You can always replace the assistant project manager or someone with the same amount of career opportunities and knowledge as me, but you can't replace that type of knowledge because not everybody knows how to use computers. No, nobody knows the shortcuts for everything, right? So that's kind of my plan B. My job stability, what makes me different. But
yeah, I think you're enabling yourself to be a servant leader, right?
Yeah.
You know, you just highlighted your job is to make everybody around you's life easier. It's not about being people's boss. It's not about trying to delegate down. It's about no matter what position you're in, trying to flip that pyramid and be useful to everybody around you and fill in the gaps that they don't have. Right. So you're trying to become a more well-rounded individual.
Yeah. Because to the following point, my day-to-day supervision of the subs, it's my goal is to make their life easier. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're coming up on this activity. It's a critical path. You got to get there. What do I need to do to make your job easier? You need an inspection called in. You want it early. You want it late. What do I need to get you there so we can keep this schedule on schedule? We don't have float in this schedule. It has to be done today.
That's an amazing perspective, because few people have that. So many GCs just want to pull, you know, their junk out of their pants and compare sizes and try to beat the subs into submission and get them to do what they want. Very few people actually look at the sub and say, hey, what do you need from me to make your job easier? We're only as good as our subs. If you're a general contractor out there, we're only as good as our subcontractors, right? We need them to perform at their highest level. And our job, just like a coach on any football team or basketball team, is to get the best out of their players. Right? So we need to put them in situations to win, and we need to break down, maybe that's break down barriers, whatever it is. Our job is to support them, right?
Not because talk down at, to them. At the end of the day, what sub's going to want to work with a GC that just swings their dick all the time, you know?
Right.
Hammering down on them. It's like, no, I don't want to work with them anymore. They make my life miserable. It's not fun. And I don't make any money.
So what's next for Sam? You know, you're at this company. You're loyal to them. They're taking care of you. Where do you think your career can go from there? How confident are you in that? Do you feel like there's a good old boys club working against you? Do you feel like you're part of it? What's your future like?
If anything, I am part of it. And I say that jokingly and lightly. But I love the company I work for. My goal is to be a PM within the next 2 years. You know, God willing. That is the goal. But I'm happy where I'm at right now, because the responsibilities and the movement and the breathing room that I have, it affords me the ability to technically be a PM over subs, right? You have your traditional project manager in a sense, you have your PX, but me as my labeled assistant project manager, I have my framing, my drywall, my doors, you know, my stucco, my waterproofing. Those are my guys. I'm owning those subs. They come to me with, hey, look, this is going to be a change. How do you feel about a change order? I'm able to direct them like, I don't think we should go that route. We don't really want to spend money on that. You know, the owner's down our neck about contingency. It's not really the best time right now. Let's go down a cheaper avenue. So that makes me feel good when I have that room to be able to manage that side. So, I mean, 2 years down the line, I'll be looking to try to move up.
So I think a lot of young people, especially if they come out with construction management degrees, you know, they want to be a PM right away, project manager. They want to have that title, you know, right away. You obviously want that. You work very hard. You just said you could probably get it now if you went to another company, right? Or you didn't say that you could get it if you went to another company, but
right.
I mean, that's just a line that I just drew. Why wait 2 years? Why? What is the importance of the process in the next 2 years of experience to you fulfilling that role?
I want to finish where I'm at right now, because I feel like there's a lot to learn. We're midway through a project right now, and it's different than any project I've ever worked on. Louisiana doesn't have block and plank. It's all stick.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So wood framing in Louisiana. It's cinder blocks and concrete pads is what we have in Southwest Florida.
It's different than anything I've ever dealt with. And I want to get that experience, because I want my background, I'm going to want my resume to read solid in all divisions. You know, it's nice having that petrochemical, heavy industrial, light industrial, heavy civil. It's nice having those badges on my resume, but in Florida, especially Southwest Florida, having that block and plank is nice. It's highlighted when people are looking at your resume. So I'm also patient. Like I said before, I'm complacent where I'm at right now. Not stagnant, just complacent, because I want to get all the knowledge that I can where I'm at right now.
Yeah. And you have some great mentors. Like you have a lot of talent around you. You know, I think about Tom, and I think about, you know, some of the other guys there. Not to mention, you know, specific names out there, but there's people there that have a wealth of knowledge, you know, that have been around since before you were born, before I was born, right?
Decades.
Tom's literally been in the industry since the year before I was born, right?
Probably when the dinosaurs died too, but.
Yeah. And, you know, there's the unique thing about Florida too, is that there's people from all around the country here, right? So you're pulling from a unique talent pool. You know, I'm debating on if I want to bring up this subject in my mind. I know that you have some thoughts, because we've spoken about this before, and we've already alluded to going here. The good old boys club. That's a problem that I see for young. The perception that the good old boys club exists is a problem that I see for young black kids.
Right.
I don't say that as just like an outsider making a judgment, or, you know, just kind of going like this and just making an assumption. I say that as somebody that has been mentoring high school students for 10 years, right? So I'm saying that out of experience from what kids have said to me in New York City and in Boston and in Florida and in Southwest Florida. What concerns me is where this comes from. And it clearly comes from information that people are being fed. Mm-hmm. You know, and the biggest travesty that I see in that message getting down, or that picture being painted for young minorities, is that they're missing out on an opportunity to be in what I think is the greatest industry that offers the most abundant, diverse, and limitless opportunities to make a very nice living and achieve a very nice lifestyle for yourself. Right. It's putting blinders on people. I was recently on a project in Cleveland, and when I got in my rental car, I turned the radio on, and on the radio was radio program talking. I turned on the radio in Cleveland. I was in a rental car, and it was a rap station. And they were literally talking about how Black people should not go to Florida for any reason.
I saw that too the other day. It was like a state of emergency against Florida. What do you call it? It was not visit or something.
Yeah. It was I guess it was the president or somebody from the NAACP.
And yeah.
I'm not trying to, you know, bash the NAACP or anything like that. I'm simply saying they issued a warning for Black people not to come to Florida.
Yeah.
You know, and it was on the radio in Cleveland. And now, you know, I look at somebody like yourself who lives in Florida.
Yeah.
Who in the office that you work in, there's a Trump flag. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of young Black people around the country, they would assume that because you're in Florida and because the bosses support Trump, you know, there is a good old boys club. There's no opportunity for them. And in Florida specifically, there's certainly no opportunity, you know, because of, you know, what a scary world we live here in Southwest Florida.
Right.
What would you say to that? I mean, you just told me that you have no limit in your career. You feel like you're part of the boys club at the company that you're at. Like, is it that scary? Like, should young Black people be afraid of the industry and or of this area?
It's really not. Coming from Louisiana, I lived it every day. I have been called racial slurs my entire life growing up. Hell, we can get to it later if you like. I have a father-in-law that I've never spoken to, just once, at my wife's graduation from her MBA program, where he didn't even want to shake my mom's hand, but he reluctantly did. But we could talk about that a little later.
We could talk about it right now. I mean, you know, because I think it's a good point, right? It creates context.
Yeah,
that you have, there's a notion out there for a lot of people that, you know, racism isn't a problem at all and that it doesn't exist. Therefore, when people complain about it, they're crying about a boogeyman, right?
Right.
You are somebody who has experienced that.
Yeah.
Right. And so talk about that specific instance. If you could just go into a little bit of detail, I don't want you to share more than you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
It's your personal life.
Yeah, of course.
And then the question after that is describe the situation, and then I'll ask the follow-up question because I don't want to talk too much.
All right. So yeah, growing up in South Louisiana, Baton Rouge, outside of Baton Rouge, Prairieville is where my parents' house specifically was, especially in the construction industry where I was working. Everything wasn't hunky-dory, sunshine and rainbows, right? It's a hard industry to be in, especially working in petrochemical in the plants. You know, you have the rednecks, you have the guys that just got out of jail looking for a new job. They beef, they clash because they come from two sides of the track, right? Mm-hmm. That's where most of your racial, I'm misplacing the word, but that's where most of your racial confrontation come from, right? Mm-hmm. It's just two different ways of life. Mm-hmm. But then you also have your general foreman who came from that side of the track, but he learned to accept everybody because everybody works differently, but a hard worker, it doesn't matter. It transcends all races, right? Mm-hmm. So you have every single different type of thing. Now, growing up as a kid playing baseball with all white kids, you know, you'll have that one parent in the stands for the opposing team call you the N-word, you shouldn't be playing here, this, that, and the other, or in high school. I went to all private Christian school, right? Mm-hmm. We played other all private Christian schools, but yet the five-star seniors were all Black, but yet we're all getting called the N-word in the middle of the game because the school was up in the country. They were Christian school, but they still called you the N-word, right? So right. you learn to move with the punch. You learn to roll your shoulder, bring your head in to roll the shoulder or roll the punch off your face, right? So anytime I see that now, it's just a laughing matter for me. Like, I get a chuckle out of it because, like, you have no idea what I've lived. You know, I have no idea what I've been through, right? And so to the point is, I'm married. We'll be married a year in May. I've been together with my wife for 3.5 years. I love her more than anything in this world. It's the reason I'm here. It's the reason I'm on this podcast with you. If it wasn't for her, I've never met you. Yep. Her father is not in her life anymore. Unfortunately, they are estranged, but her father is not in her life because she decided to love someone who was hardworking, loved his daughter, did everything for his daughter, still does do everything for his daughter, but couldn't get past the fact that the color of his skin was black. Nothing else. I have never had a conversation with my father-in-law. I've only shaken his hand. I have never been in the same room as my father-in-law except once for my wife's graduation. He refuses to have a conversation with me at any cost. He's supposed to fly on Sunday. He's flying on Sunday specifically to avoid me and my wife, because that's when we come back home. That's the type of racism I'm dealing with. Now, I'm not complaining. It's laughable because he's missing out on the best parts of his daughter's life, especially when we have kids. They're probably going to be his first grandkids. That's on him. I'm going to love my kids no matter what. I'm not going to talk bad about them. I'm not going to disrespect them because, one, my father-in-law is a vice president of supply chain for one of the biggest Department of Defense contractors in the world, specifically for the U.S. government. Do with that information that you will. Vice president of supply chain for one of the largest DOD contractors in the country. But common sense does not click for him. He has a master's in mechanical engineering, So cognitive function for him is on point every day of his life because he has to be. Or else the company loses money and they fail, lose contracts, etc. But he can't get over one simple fact of color.
Didn't he say the one time he did shake your hand, didn't he say something to you?
When I shook his hand, I said, because we were at a ceremony for my wife, I said, nice to meet you, sir. No matter what our differences is, I want you to know that I love your daughter. You shouldn't have an issue with me. I just want you to give me a chance. And he said, I don't have an issue with you. I have an issue with my daughter dating black men. That's what he said. I just kind of chuckled straight up. I chuckled and I sat down. Didn't snap back at him. I didn't say anything like, oh, you asshole. No. Because at the end of the day, he's still my wife's father. I got to respect him. But that's just another trick on my story, on my testimony, if you call it.
So you've clearly illustrated that you have experienced things that a lot of people think don't exist, or, you know, that they couldn't fathom it, right? Like my in-laws, I don't think that my in-laws were thrilled that my wife chose me because I'm not Italian. but they talk to me, right?
Yeah.
So just try to break up the mood a little bit. You know, again, you've clearly experienced some racism, right? Some things that other people can't fathom. And that would break a lot of people, right? That would break their spirit. It would put a lot of people in that victim mindset, right? Mm-hmm. And it would put people in a situation where when you go into a situation, and I'll be honest with you, I see a lot of minorities struggle with the way people talk to them in the industry, because they assume that people are being racist to them when they're not. They're just talking to them the same way that they talk to everybody else. But because of other pain that they've felt outside, or, you know, actual things that they've experienced, like you just said, or whatever perception has been created, you know, they are sensitive. And I'm not saying sensitive in a bad way, right? Yeah. Just the true definition of the word. Have you experienced that in Louisiana, in Florida, you know, in the construction industry? Is it rampant? How often does it happen?
It's actually funny because I have not had one racial incident in the state of Florida since I've been here. You brought up the Trump flag in the office. Yeah, it's there. I'm not going to lie, but it's funny. It lightens the mood in the office because the office is free to be who you want to be. The office is mixed. You know, you have people who are left-leaning. You have people who are right-leaning. You have people who are middle-leaning. The office is free to be who you are truly, who you are as a person, right? And we all get along. Mm-hmm. We're mature enough to not bring our differences into the conversation. That's for your personal life, right? You came to the function last week. You had all different types of walks of life there.
Oh, yeah.
It looked like everybody was having fun, right?
And you were not the only black person.
I was not, right?
No, you weren't. And, you know, I said there was women, there was Hispanic people, black people, white people, there was all kinds of people.
Yeah. It was all different walks of life, all having a good time together. And that's literally what Southwest Florida is. It doesn't matter race, religion, sex, politics, none of that matters. It's about caring for everybody. And that's all I've experienced when I've come down here.
Funny, because so my mothership is in New York, you know, and I work with people all over the country now. That's the map behind me. And yeah. I tell people, especially the first couple of years I was down here, because it was, you know, 2020, 2021, 2022, it was a little more inflamed. The world was a little more inflamed than it is right now, although we're probably heading back to it because of the election. But, you know, it's less of a topic down here than it is up there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it seems to be a big deal where people make it a big deal. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, people just don't talk about it down here. It's just different. And I think people, I was just texting somebody the other day, you know, one of my best friends from college works at a GC in LA, and he was talking about, and this other guy we were talking about, you know, their families all think that everyone in Florida is just, you know, rednecks, alligators, and people just gay bashing. And it's like, why do you, it's an interesting perspective, because like I said, you know, people listen to this all over the place. They listen to it in other countries. And just be cautious about whatever picture's in your head. Think about why it's there, right? Yeah. And don't let that deter you from what could be the best opportunity of your life, right? What could be the difference between you making something of yourself and providing for your family and struggling your whole life. You know what I mean?
I saw a statistic earlier when I was getting ready for this podcast. 57% of all construction workforce is Latino, which is mind-boggling, because in Florida, such a bad place. I know you've experienced it. Almost 98% of the workforce on every single job site in Southwest Florida is a person of, whether a Nicaraguan, Mexican, Honduran, Venezuelan, and they don't care. They're hardworking. They don't stop. They take minimal breaks and keep going till the building is done.
Right.
And I know I can speak for the ones on my job, or not sure how yours are, but they're asking us when the next job is.
They're hungry, man. They're hustling.
They're hungry.
The work ethic down here is out of control, and it is some out of control heat. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So in all watching the news, I've had to turn the news off, because it's like, oh, we're treating immigrants bad, or immigrants are treated so badly in the country. I'm like, have you come to my construction site? Because we're paying them top dollar to do stuff that they enjoy doing.
Yeah, I use an example of, I don't want to say the company, but, you know, an electrician down here, Cuban immigrant, guy barely spoke English, 60 grand a year, plus a truck, plus a gas card, plus, you know, all this overtime. He owns like 2 condo buildings. He's doing just fine. And he's like one of the best electrical foremen I've ever worked with. I'd work with him anytime. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, I think of, you know, I didn't realize that he started his own company, but Lewis, who I'm going to have on the podcast, great guy, right? He was at Lead Mechanical, and now he's
starting his own business, right?
And he's his own business owner. And what does he do? He walks right into your company's office with you know, the Trump loving white guys. He's like, hey, he was at the party, and he's like, hey, want to start my own business? Can you help me? You know, can you help me get on my feet and give me some work? Yep, no problem, because Lewis works really freaking hard, and he's a super nice guy. What do you say to the young people out there? Because like I said, I've spoken to a lot of young people over the years, and I've had young black women tell me, you know, will people hire me because I'm a black woman? You know what I mean? In other words, they think that they won't get hired because of it, or they're not going to get promoted, or that people are going to, you know, shun them and not take them under their wing. What do you say to the young people who haven't considered the industry, or because of whatever perceptions in their brain, you know, don't want to consider the industry?
Yeah. So I had to learn this the hard way. First, no one's going to like to hear this. Don't play the victim card. Second, be confident. You may not know everything. Be confident. Speak with authority. The second thing is, life is hard. Get a helmet, man. The fourth thing is, don't stop. Keep being persistent. You can ask anybody in the company I work for right now, what Sam do the best? He doesn't stop. I will ram out 10 back-to-back emails to the same person until I get an answer. I'll piss you off, but at least I'm gonna get an answer. You know, I'm persistent. And just look at the statistics. I was preparing for this again. 47% of the overall US workforce is women, right? 11% of that are women in construction. Only 8.5% of that are women in a construction management position, right? 12.6% of the overall US workforce are black or people of color. 6.7% of that is in the construction industry. So that's 6.7% of 12.6%, right? And then only 5.3% of that are black people in construction, right? So people look at that statistics, and they're already counting themselves out, because they assume no one's going to hire them. No one's going to give them an interview. No one's going to even bat an eye at that resume, right? I give this analogy. So LSU, every year for a construction management degree or construction management college, had its own interview day. It was called CID, Construction Interview Day, every single semester, right? You would go online through this portal, you would apply to jobs, and then they would either give you a selection or not. You can get up to 10 interviews in a day, right? So everybody would be excited about that. And, you know, in classes, people would be talking, all the black guys would be like, oh, the good old boy program, you know, I'm not going to get an interview, blah, blah, blah. But then they were confident enough to submit their resume and get that interview, or they would network the day before at the happy hour and get an interview off of being confident, just going up to somebody and shaking their hand. Hey, I'm Sam. How you doing? I'm a junior. I'm a senior. Tell me more about your company. What are you looking for in a company? Or what are you looking for in an employee, an intern? You know? Yeah, I'm good with computers. I'm really good with Excel. Spreadsheets, I'm your guy. It wasn't that, oh, I'm the best in construction. I'm good at one thing and I can grow from that. Don't think just because you're this, this, and this that you're not going to get an opportunity, right? You have to insert yourself into the situation in order to make yourself better. It's the only way you're going to learn. I put it like this. You have to put yourself in a position to fail, to grow and learn, to be successful. You have to get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, I'd say let other people think negatively.
Yeah.
Right.
People are going to think what they're going to think.
Right. Doesn't control your outcome. It's a really good point. Like, don't take yourself out of the game.
Yeah.
You know, if you take yourself out of the game, then you can't score and you can't win.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so much pie out there to be eaten right now. There's no time for anybody to really be racist or prejudiced. Yeah. Like 7 people leaving the industry, only one's coming in, and the demand isn't going away. Yeah. Right. And to be completely honest with you, the media and the politicians and everybody, they want you to think they want you to think that people have more negative thoughts than they actually have. You know what I mean? Like, it's a problem where they want it to be a problem. And, you know, I think if anything in the construction industry, you won't find a better environment where a more diverse group of people can come around, work towards a common goal, where only merit, only competency matters, and people can make fun of themselves and each other. And just keep giving it back, right?
Like, I crack jokes all day. It doesn't matter who it is. I'm going to make fun of you. I'm going to make fun of myself. I'm the first person that laughs at myself.
Right.
You're not going to make a joke, or you're not going to say anything about me that I haven't said 6 inches from the mirror.
So now where does it go for Sam from here? You're going to go PM. You're going to stick with this company until something else changes your mind. And, you know, any thoughts of starting your own business position?
I actually dissolved the little side business I had for the past 6 months last month. I back to the who you know situation. I had a family friend who is a knife sharpener manufacturer out of Baton Rouge. The company was called Warthog Knife Sharpeners. And I started a little side business. I was going to start selling knife sharpeners just as, you know, get out the house, go to some sportsman shows, you know, network a little bit, sell some knife sharpeners, get a few business cards, try to get a few bids in, you know, but, you know, that didn't go as I planned. So on to the drawing board again.
Gotcha. So, you know, what I would say is in store for Sam, just because I want to lay a career path out there for, you know, some people is, you come in as an assistant super, and then you can be an APM, right? An assistant project manager. And at that point, what are you doing? It's like what Sam said, you're managing the subs, you're quarterbacking maybe specific trades, you're running RFIs and submittals, and then you become a project manager, right? And then you're kind of managing what you have to manage. You're managing all those things from a higher level. You're working with some APMs and some supers, right? And the supers are a little more trade focused, is what I would say. And then you can become a senior PM, whether you're managing multiple PMs and really big jobs. And then you can go to be a general super where you run all the supers. You can be a director of operations. You can be a project executive where you're even higher level and you're doing a little more of the fun stuff, you know, negotiating contracts and taking people out and having fun. Yeah. The problem then, though, is that when all the other people screw up, client calls you and they have a problem and you get all the problem phone calls too, right?
Yeah.
And what's the pay like between Louisiana and Florida? Different?
Yeah. So Louisiana APM salary for commercial would be about 65 for APM and commercial. For industrial, heavy civil, mechanical, heavy mechanical, like the Turner Industries, it's about 67 APM. Florida APMs are averaging about 70, 75 upper 70s. So the cost of living has to do a lot with it.
Right.
Florida's nice that no income tax or no state income tax compared to Louisiana, excuse me, where the state tax is 9.5%.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I would have assumed that it had no income tax just because I thought Louisiana was a red state.
No.
Jeez. Okay.
Gotcha. I mean, our last two governors were Democrats. So.
Yeah. Okay. Didn't know that. All right. Yeah. So that's significant. That's, you're making... You know, you're making 70 grand a year. That's like almost 7 grand coming right out of your paycheck.
But also a fun fact about Louisiana is Louisiana is the most strict and the hardest when it comes to tests. So we have the hardest bar. We have the hardest GC license exam. It's insane, man.
I've actually heard that. I've heard that from a few people.
Yeah.
So listen, guys, the sky's the limit. You know, I'm really glad that Sam came on. He's an example of everything that I would want my son to be. A gentleman, not a victim. Somebody who works hard, takes initiative, and is confident because of the hard work and preparation that he puts in. I think the world could use more Sams. I hope that this podcast finds the people who need it. There's a lot of people that need guidance out there, especially our young men, you know, regardless of what color or creed they are. So again, Sam, I appreciate you coming on. I'm excited to see where your career takes you. I'm glad that we ran into each other the other day. And like I said, your bosses better be careful because I've had you in the back of my mind since I left.
Like I said, get in line because I'm talking about internal, man. Not even mentioning external.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Well, good for you, man.
Appreciate it.
Here's the thing is that anybody like Sam's always going to have the band anywhere he goes. So, you know, Sam, if people need any advice or want to reach out to you, can they find you? Or
yeah.
This is it.
I'll plug my Instagram here, guys. You got to excuse me. It's X double underscore dot Sam double underscore X.
So I'm going to tag
description below.
Yeah. I'll tag Sam in the post so you guys can reach out to him. Anyway, you can follow this podcast, the Construction Mentor Podcast, on Spotify, Apple, or YouTube. You can always get me on TikTok, Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn now too, which is kind of funny because I don't really pay attention to it, but I'm on there as well.
Do you have two LinkedIns?
I don't have two LinkedIns. I deleted my old one. And you can go to constructionmentor.org. I'm going to release a HVAC course soon. You can schedule time with me if you need some mentorship, you need some guidance. You know, I want to make myself available. Where I see this platform going is pairing people up in mentorship because I think that's the best education. I think it's better than college. I think it's better than life experience. Having the right mentor can make all the difference in the world. As Sam just told you, you know, he's taken off in his career because of the mentorship that he had from his father and that he continues to get professionally. So I want to link those people up, especially as we have all of these old people about to exit the industry. We need to siphon off this experience before they get out. So again, I appreciate you coming on, and I will see everybody next time. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.